Mr. Tribe will hear from you.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, I think I would want to note at the outset that the alleged due process violation, which keeps popping up and then disappearing and has, as far as I can tell, not appeared in the state Supreme Court, did make one appearance in the reply brief here, is really not before the court, and for understandable reasons, because although it is part of the popular culture to talk about how unfair it is to change the rules of the game, I think that misses the point when the game is over, and when it's over in a kind of photo finish that leaves people unsure who won, and then the question is, how do you develop greater certainty? And a rather common technique is a recount, sometimes a manual recount, sometimes taking more time. It would be rather like looking more closely at the film of a photo finish. It's nothing extraordinary. It's not like suddenly moving Heartbreak Hill or adding a mile or subtracting a mile from
You're saying marathon. No important policy in 3 U.S.C. Section 5?
No.
In fact, we can change the rules after the game. Not important.
No,
popular
certainly
culture.
Not, Justice Kennedy, but I read U.S.C. Section 5, that is 3 U.S.C. Section 5, not as a requirement that, for example, one never add resources to checking how a particular ballot was cast. If you look at the language, I think it's really much too casual to say of it that all of the laws must stay fixed in order to have the safe harbor apply, though as I'll try to argue in a few minutes, that's really not a question for this court, but rather for the Congress. But the language of Section 5 is that, and I'll just read what I think are the key words. If a state...
Can you tell us where you're reading from?
Actually, I'm just reading from a copy of the U.S. Code, 3 U.S.C. Section 5, not from the page I can identify.
It's in the appendix to the petitioner's brief, I'm sure, isn't it?
Yes, although I'm afraid I don't have it in front of me.
Page 3A of the blue brief.
Thank you, Justice Souter. Page 3A of the blue brief, I am reliably informed. So if any state...
That won't get you an extra 2 minutes.
Well, I tried. If any state shall have provided, and then it says by laws enacted prior to the day fixed for the appointment of the electors, a fancy way of saying election day, for the final determination of any controversy or contest about the appointment of electors, and here's the key phrase, I think, by judicial or other methods or procedures, at least 6 days before the time fixed for the meeting of the electors, that means in our situation, December 12, then the final determination shall be conclusive and govern the counting in Congress. Now the question for Congress, I suppose, would be, though I don't see how this court could get into that question at this stage, but the question would be, is a particular change extending a deadline for exigent circumstances because a recount has been authorized, a change in the judicial or methods of procedures for resolving the contest?
Let me ask you just a moment, Mr. You say you don't think this statute permits this court to get into the matter at this time. Are you suggesting there could be any judicial review of a decision by the Congress to count one set of electoral votes?
No, I don't think so, Mr. Chief Justice. It's just that I don't trust my own imagination to have exhausted all possibilities. For example, in the case in, I think it was 1890, in Fitzgerald v. Green, when this court held that only states can punish fraudulent voting for presidential electors, it got into the act sort of obliquely and at an angle, and that had a bearing on the question of how the presidential electoral slate might be composed, but it certainly didn't get into this.
No, it certainly was quite different from this hypothetical.
No, that's certainly right.
You suggest in your reply brief that it is not, I think you said it's not self-evident, that the Florida legislature at this time has the right to appoint any slate of delegates because the Congress has set the date and the date is the general election day. If that is so, doesn't this mean that when we think about justiciability, we must be very careful to preserve the role of the court. You have said that the or suggested here on the page in your reply brief that the Florida legislature now has no role. You are now suggesting that this court has no role. That means the Supreme Court of Florida is it so far as judicial interpretation of the consequences of 3 U.S.C. Section 5.
Well, Justice Kennedy, first of all, I do want to be clear that in our view, the question of whether and when and how the Florida legislature can enter the picture is in no way presented here. That paragraph was intended to suggest that it's not obvious that the views of some that there's no problem is right. Secondly, if it were the case that the Florida legislature could not simply decide, well, we're tired of all this counting, we're moving in, and that this court cannot decide whether the conditions of 3 U.S.C. Section 5 are met, it would then remain only for Congress to make a determination, and adding the Florida legislature would not, after all, have added an adjudication.
And my point is that puts hydraulic pressure on your non-justiciability argument and makes it a very, very important argument and a critical argument in this case.
Well, perhaps, Justice Kennedy, but I frankly can't see how it would affect the decision in this case. That is, after all, you have before you a judgment of the highest court of a state. Justice Ginsburg and others have suggested, it would ordinarily be the case, surely, that one would not go out of one's way to read the judgment as a breach of faith with the duties of trying to reconcile provisions that are
in
tension.
Well, I guess in the area, though, of presidential electors, it could be that that court, as all courts would be, have to be informed, at least, by the provisions of Section 5 in reviewing the laws enacted by the legislature of the state. It had to register somehow with the Florida courts that that statute was there and that it might be in the state's best interest not to go around changing the law after the election.
Well, Justice O'Connor, I certainly agree that if the Florida Supreme Court adverted to 3 U.S.C. Section 5 and, as Justice Kennedy asked earlier, got it wrong, then there would be a federal issue for this court. Would it be, I wonder,
a
federal issue?
Well, is there a federal issue if the court doesn't?
No. The answer is no.
Advert to it.
It would be nice, but remember, it is
because
conceded.
Article 2, which, after all, does give the legislature plenary power and must have wanted to have the laws in place so that Florida wouldn't risk losing its electoral votes. I mean, the legislature had to want that enacting laws, and perhaps the Florida court has to be aware of the consequences to the state of changing the rules.
But Justice O'Connor, under Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2, the authority to regulate the manner of the choice of electors is vested in the state legislature. If the state legislature decides from the beginning to exercise that authority by instructing the various institutions, certainly not just the courts, the Attorney General, the Secretary of State, in very particular ways to exercise their roles in the process with
a
specific view of...
Well, it certainly did by enacting that date. Here is the certification date. How could it have been clearer?
Well, I suppose it could be a violation of Florida law if the enactment of that date is construed as a direction to a particular authority, like the Secretary of State or the state's highest court, to take certain actions in order to get the benefit of this bonus, but only a violation of federal law.
Well,
I don't see how you get
Florida law with that.
Of state law, I'm sorry.
Are you talking about the Florida Constitution?
Well, it might have been a violation.
But then you run into the Blacker case.
But it seems to me that the federal question, which is really what brings us here,
yes,
can only arise if 3 U.S.C. Section 5 is something other than what Mr. Olson called an invitation to the state.
It can also arise under the section of the Constitution that was construed in Blacker. That's quite independent of 3 U.S. 5.
Well, that's right. If one concluded that Florida had violated its duty to empower the legislature to take these regulatory steps.
If one concluded that the Florida legislature had relied on the state constitution in a way that the Blacker case says it may not in construing the statute.
I think that's possible, Mr. Chief Justice, but the judgment before you doesn't provide even an inkling, I think, of proof about those matters. All we have...
Well, it does or whether it doesn't.
Well, I think we've been arguing several interrelated things. One of the things we've been arguing is whether one could, in good faith, reach the conclusion, novel as it was in some respects, as Justice O'Connor points out, that the Florida Supreme Court reached. Now, if the answer to that question was no, perhaps if there were a due process issue in this case, and if someone had a protectable interest that was injured, that would be relevant. But the federal question that makes that relevant here would arise only if one forgot that 3 U.S.C. Section 5 is all carrot and no stick.
No, I don't agree with you on that, Mr. Tribe. It seems to me a federal question arises if the Florida Supreme Court, in its opinion, rather clearly says that we're using the Florida Constitution to reach the result we reach in construing the statute. And I think Blacker is a strong argument they can't do that.
Well, that they can never advert to their own constitution, I don't think so.
Certainly it stands for the proposition you couldn't do it then, in those circumstances.
Well, what would it be, I wonder, about the circumstances here that would say that in reconciling these provisions, which at first we were told were mandatory, then we were told they're not mandatory, they give discretion, and now we're told that the real issue is simply, did the court, in putting a boundary on that discretion, do something federally impermissible? What would it be about that sequence that would implicate?
You know, if the Supreme Court of Florida simply said in its opinion, look, these sections of the statute conflict, we've got to, under our traditional principles, resolve it one way or the other. But it doesn't say that. It goes on to say, look, in the light of the Florida Constitution and the general rights conferred there, we're construing it this way.
It seems to me that as a tiebreaker, as a way of shedding light on the provisions that are in conflict, so long as it's not done in a way that conflicts with a federal mandate, they're not violating any.
I don't agree with that. I don't think that the Florida Supreme Court used the Florida Constitution as a tool of interpretation of the statute. If you look at its opinion, it's separated into various sections. The issues, legal opinion of the Division of Elections, 5, the applicable law, Roman 6, statutory ambiguity, and 7, legislative intent. That's the section where they construe the statute in view of these ambiguities and so forth. That section concludes, under this statutory scheme, the county canvassing boards are required to submit their returns to the department by 5 p.m. of the 7th day following the election. The statutes make no provision for exceptions following a manual recount. If a board fails to meet the deadline, the secretary is not required to ignore the county's returns, but rather is permitted to ignore the returns within the parameters of this statutory scheme. Mm-hmm. So what the statutory interpretation gives you is a firm termination date of December 7th and discretion in the secretary. The opinion continues. Roman 8, the right to vote. The text of our Florida Constitution begins with a Declaration of Rights, and it goes on to say that to the extent the legislature may enact laws regulating the electoral process, those laws are valid only if they impose no, quote, unreasonable or unnecessary, close quote, restraints on the right of suffrage contained in the Constitution. In other words, I read the Florida court's opinion as quite clearly saying, having determined what the legislative intent was, we find that our state constitution trumps that legislative intent. I don't think there's any other way to read it. And that is a real problem, it seems to me, under Article 2, because in fact, there is no right of suffrage under Article 2. There's a right of suffrage in voting for the legislature, but Article 2 makes it very clear that the legislature can itself appoint the electors.
But it seems to me that it's already been conceded that the legislature can delegate that function to the judiciary. And when Justice Kennedy asked if it can delegate the function to the judiciary, and that is what McPherson seems to suggest, then can it not delegate something less? That is, can it not give the judiciary a role of the sort that it's exercising here? After all, the legislature, and this is important, it's not true in every state, the legislature itself re-promulgates the Constitution every several years, and then it's ratified by the people.
Isn't there another way of looking at what the Florida court did, and that was, in effect, to apply the statute, the interpretive criterion, that where there is any discretion for interpretation, an unconstitutional result should be avoided. And because you have here a statute, as I understand it, that regulates both federal and state recounts, that much is, I think, right, is clear. The only way to avoid an unconstitutional meaning of the statute, so far as Florida law was concerned, was to get into this constitutional concern about preserving the franchise. And that because the legislature intended one standard to cover both federal and state recounts, it therefore is valid to consider the state constitution in order to derive a general meaning that will apply to a federal as well as a state election.
I fully accept that view, Justice Souter. I would supplement it with one important point. We're not dealing here with a decision in which, within the gray area where a court could reasonably go either way, this court simply said, we don't care about these federal considerations. It, in particular, exercised its equitable powers in favor of the petitioner in order to facilitate meeting the December 12 deadline while still being able to have electoral contests.
Professor,
that December 12 deadline comes purely from federal law.
But can you just go back to your characterization of the opinion? I think we'd all agree that given that the legislature has to select the manner, a state can't say, our Constitution selects the electors. I suppose
that's
right.
I think that's right.
All right, but thinking of this opinion, suppose the court had said, look, we reach our result based on the canons we found in Blackstone. Now, nobody's going to say they've said Blackstone selecting the electors, right?
I think that
all
makes
right.
sense.
Now, I suppose they said we reached this decision based on the values found in the Constitution. That would be like Blackstone.
I think
but suppose
right.
they say, well, the legislature wants us to do X, but our Constitution requires us to do not X. That might be different.
It might be
now,
different.
What is it that they've done here?
Well, I certainly don't think they've done the third. They did not say. I think when they underscored the presence of language that Justice Scalia read about what's mandatory, they were simply being candid about the fact that they were acting in conflict with one part of the statute, but the
it's adjacent... It's in a separate section of the opinion, Professor Tribe, that is entitled The Right to Vote. It is after the legislative intent section, and it says categorically, to the extent the legislature may enact laws, they're invalid. And I suggest perhaps the reason that the court did it is that however expansive the doctrine of constitutional doubt is, there is no way that it can make December 7 mean anything except December 7. I mean, they were almost constrained to use the Constitution override the firm deadline that
Justice
was explicitly set forth in the Constitution.
Justice Scalia, both you and I think at one point Justice O'Connor, in pointing to the particular dates that came out differently under the approach that this court used from what would have emerged if they had looked only at 102.111, are making a mistake, with all respect. It's not as though this court promulgated a rule for the future about December 7. in commemoration of Pearl Harbor, we say December 7 is the day. No, what they did was say we have to find a date which will accommodate these conflicting statutory provisions and policies in light of what our Constitution tells us. And we surely, it would amaze this court to see anyone saying that because an opinion was organized under Roman numeral headings
and Professor Tribe,
in such a way that...
Isn't it also true, Professor Tribe, that Part 8 of the opinion relies on four things? The Florida Constitution, earlier Florida decisions construing statutes, an Illinois case, and a federal case.
Absolutely.
Not just the Illinois.
That's right.
Is it also true that the inability to use Section 7 depended in the Florida Supreme Court's reasoning not on the existence of the Constitution as the sole reason, but on the inability to make the December 7 date final and provide for the recounts within the times in which recounts can be called for? So that's what I'm saying is, didn't they say that the date of the 7th cannot stand, not because of the Constitution alone, but because there are other provisions in the statute that cannot be accommodated with sections with the 7th date?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I guess
they said that twice, and I think that's critical. If you add to that we read a decision of a state court in the light most favorable to that court and not in the light least favorable, I suppose there would be a possibility for this court to remand for clarification. But if there's two readings, one that's questionable and one that isn't, all of our decisions suggest that we read the one.
Especially, I think, Justice Ginsburg, when the odds that these conceivable federal problems are indispensable to this result are overwhelmingly negative. That is, it's not as though one cannot explain the result this court reached in the most conventional standard ways. And the fact that...
Professor Tribe, I would feel much better about that resolution if you could give me one sentence in the opinion that supports the second of these supposed alternative readings, that supports the proposition that the Florida Supreme Court was using the constitutional right to vote provisions as an interpretive tool to determine what the statute meant. I can't find a single sentence.
I think, Justice Scalia, I can do a little better than find a sentence. The entire structure of that part of the opinion, as Justice Stevens points out, would be incoherent if the Constitution was decisive. That is the highest law in Florida. Why bother with all the rest if that is anything more than an interpretive guide?
You would bother with it because, having decided very clearly what the statute requires and finding no way to get around the firm date set, you say the reason it's bad is because of the state constitution. That's how it's written.
Now, no, but
they might have tried it another way, but it seems to me they
didn't. They also say that the provision that reaches the result that conflicts with the authorized recounts was written in 1951, that in 1989 they wrote a provision that unmistakably created discretion, and we haven't yet discussed this provision also created the provision that when the returns are filed late, it doesn't say throw them away, it doesn't say give them back, it says fine every member of the canvassing board $200 a day. That would be a totally crazy provision. As this opinion understands, if you were not to reach a reconciliation of this sort, this result was overdetermined under Florida law. It might be true that they said the Constitution also points this way, but there isn't a sentence in the opinion that suggests that without that constitutional argument, the result would have to be different.
What is the November 26th date? Is that the 7-day date moved? Or is that some kind of a date that tries to reconcile the ultimate point after which the Secretary, in exercising her discretion, no longer has to accept the late returns? Did it move the date from the statute? Is it created a new date about this discretion? What is it?
Well, It looks to me like an exercise of the chancellor's foot, as it were, in this particular case. When I saw the date, November 26, I couldn't come up with an algorithm or a formula that would generate it, but the court was confronted with the task of drawing, as this court has recognized, what are sometimes inevitably arbitrary lines. That is, it said it was not consistent with the overall scheme of the statute to require these recounts, which had just begun, to terminate. That truly would be a promise to the ear to be broken to the hope, like a munificent bequest, Justice Jackson said, and
if the
pauper's will. Why tell people to count if you won't count it?
And if the legislature had jumped into the breach and said this same thing, would that be a new statute or new enactment under 5 U.S.C.?
You see, I honestly, Justice Kennedy, I'm not sure, because the language that I quoted from 3 U.S.C. Section 5 focuses on the institutional dispute resolution arrangement that is in place. And if you look at the legislative history in the decade of hearings in the period after the Hayes-Tilden debacle, that history focused on the importance of having a fixed tribunal which you could look to rather than one cooked up at the last moment. And indeed, what they seemed to be most afraid of was the political entry of legislators and executives at the 11th hour. There was no focus at all.
But are you saying you can't tell us whether they, in the hypothetical, suppose that it would be a new enactment?
Well, there certainly are no cases on the subject. The language gives me very little guidance. Since the section is addressed to Congress, neither my opinion about it nor the court's opinion is necessarily...
You don't think you could tell us what you might advise the Congress if you were the counsel for the Judiciary
Committee?
I think
I would advise
the
Congress that it is not a new enactment, that it is an entirely reasonable construction of an existing enactment, as to which the only alternative construction is to make it self-destruct and to make it internally contradictory. And I honestly don't think, if I were advising Congress, that I would say it's a new construction. I do think also that some people reasonably could argue the contrary. And I guess I think that this language should be interpreted, whether by a court or by Congress, in a way that gives some deference to the state government and its organs. And I think any degree of deference here is inconsistent with saying that there's been a federal violation, especially when I want to remind us all about the context. Are we going to say that this paragraph in this opinion says that Florida is in breach of Article 2 of the Constitution in general? Hard to say.
Should perhaps be some deference, though, to the concept expressed in Article 2, that it is the authority of the legislature, and some special concern about what the legislature may have said.
Yes, but if the legislature is entirely happy not to completely delegate this power to the courts, which Article 2 would permit, but rather to allow the courts to exercise a somewhat more flexible role than the one that the critic of this opinion would be embracing, that's within the power of the legislature of Florida.
But who would have thought that the legislature was leaving open the date for change by the court? Who would have
thought
that? Anyone.
You just read the statute in 1989 and it says may. It says she may reject the
late returns. That doesn't change the... That's not the date.
No, but the date is the one from which the may is measured. That is, you're supposed to get it in by 7 days later. What if you don't? Well, if you don't, she may or she may not reject them. Now, anybody reading that would realize that's a deadline only in a kind of Pickwickian sense. It's not a real deadline. She's got discretion. Certainly, if there's an act of God of the sort Justice Stevens asked about,
Well, then the secretary came in and argued and said, yes, her discretion was, if it were an act of God or a machine breakdown, she would exercise her discretion.
And it's an entirely normal exercise of judicial interpretation to say that this statute is not limited to God and machines.
Professor Trump, can I ask you why you think the Florida legislature delegated to the Florida Supreme Court the authority to interpose the Florida Constitution? I mean, I, I, maybe your experience with the legislative branch is different from mine, but in my experience, they are resigned to the intervention of the courts, but have certainly never invited it.
Well, I have to say my experience.
What makes you think the Florida legislature affirmatively invited the Florida Supreme Court?
The odd thing is that the system in Florida involves their own repromulgation of the Constitution, and their scheme with respect to the resolution of disputes over elections draws a sharp distinction between elections to their own House and Senate, which they won't trust the courts with as far as they can throw them. Those are to be resolved exclusively in the House and Senate, and all others are to be resolved in the courts under a standard that they understandably
they are resigned to, but they need not be resigned to the Florida Supreme Court interposing itself with respect to federal elections. They need not be, because the Florida Constitution cannot affect it. And I just find it implausible that they really invited the Florida Supreme Court to interpose the Florida Constitution between what they enacted by statute and the ultimate result of the election.
Well, I suppose if they were at all far-sighted, if they looked at their own work and saw how self-contradictory it was, they might say we would want someone with the authority to reconcile these provisions to do so in the light not only of the literal language, but of the fact that they're dealing with something very important, the franchise, the disenfranchising people, which is what this is all about. The disenfranchising people isn't very nice.
But wouldn't justice
violate the federal as well as the state constitution?
But wouldn't Justice Scalia's suggestion be a stronger suggestion if they had dealt by this statute only with federal elections, or only with the presidential election, as opposed to dealing with both state and federal in the same statute?
Well, it's not uncommon, given the convenience of having similar regulations apply on election day, not to bifurcate. Oregon v. Mitchell, after all, confronted the nation with a problem.
Right, but when they don't bifurcate, it's reasonable to suppose that they expect their statute to be construed, number one, as one statute, not as having different dates for state and federal, and number two, to be construed, so far as the state concern arises, in accordance with the state constitution. But, and if that is so, then the result is they would expect a state constitutional concern mm-hmm. to inform their interpretation of a statute which ultimately governs federal as well as state.
And they would recognize that when the federal election involves the presidency of the United States, with the special problems of the Electoral College deadline, that they might emerge with rather different deadlines and, to some extent, a different approach for the two elections.
But there are already different deadlines for federal elections, aren't there, because of the federal statute concerning overseas ballots?
Yes, that's
so
entirely true.
So that's going to be different anyway.
And there's
but
an
that's
administrative
different as a result of federal law, isn't it?
Well, there is a consent decree arising out of federal law.
But it wasn't the legislature's choice, it was Congress's choice that required
right.
that.
In 1986, there was a congressional statute that already created that difference.
Mr. Tribe, before you finish, I would like to know whether you are conceding, because some of the things you said sound like maybe you are, that the Florida legislature, under Article 2, Section 1, could say, we don't want any judicial review of anything about the manner in which we say electors should be appointed. Does the Florida legislature have the authority to cut out judicial review?
No, I certainly don't think so. They cut out judicial review, and even this may not be entirely consistent with the Florida Constitution. They cut out judicial review for the election of their own members in the House and Senate. I certainly don't think they would have the authority to expel the federal judiciary from the election of
The state judiciary, when it says each state shall appoint electors in such manner as the legislature thereof may direct, may the legislature direct as to the Florida Supreme Court? and Florida Supreme Court, we don't want you to review whatever we do.
I'm not actually clear about that, Justice Ginsburg. I've thought about it a lot. It seems to me that under Smiley v. Home, similar cases, the general principle is that the Constitution takes the state government and its arrangement as it finds it, and that when the legislature is identified, that really does not mean the legislature in some specialized capacity, as with Article 5. Now, if that's the case, and if it's therefore assumed that the legislature is surrounded with both executive and judicial authority, then a decision by the legislature to completely exclude the judiciary from any possible role, the state judiciary, it might be inconsistent with the underlying meaning of Article 2 itself.
Well, could the state legislature at least now say, in light of all this confusion, we enact a law today saying this is the way electors will be selected? Well, is that open to the legislature now?
I'm not sure. That's very much like my inability to answer, because I honestly have not reached a conclusion and it's not presented by this case. I don't know whether the legislature could do the further thing of naming electors. And if it doesn't do that...
Thank you, Mr. Chai.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice.
Mr. Olson, you have 4 minutes remaining.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the Court. It seems to me that it's very difficult to read the Florida Supreme Court decision as saying anything else other than the Florida Constitution, in their view, in that court's view, is trumping everything else. The second paragraph of the conclusion says, because the right to vote is the preeminent right in the Declaration of Rights of the Florida Constitution, and so forth. This opinion is full of language.
I suppose they'd refer to the Declaration of the Rights of Man, to the 1789, the French Revolution. I mean, the right to vote is a value in the Constitution. Are they actually saying? I didn't see it.
They say the
statute means one thing, but the statute's unconstitutional because the Constitution of Florida says the opposite. I didn't see that.
I think that the only reasonable, fair reading of the decision is that the Florida Supreme Court felt that, and it says it over and over again, that we are going to be attempt to discern the will of the people, the will of the electorate, and discern and enhance in whatever way we possibly can the right to vote. And because of that, these provisions of the statute, which are very much quintessentially legislative, the timetables that are involved in this statute, particularly the November 14th deadline, is a part of a composite package. There's 1 week for a protest and certain recounts to the extent that they can be done, and there are 4 weeks for contests. When the Florida Supreme Court expanded the protest period from 7 days to 19 days, it necessarily limited the contest period to a shorter period of time. It changed the discretion. It allowed certain things to occur that couldn't have occurred, and it justifies all of those things on the grounds that the Florida Supreme Court, the Florida Constitution, trumps those legislative concerns. So, and that's why it said we are not going to be dissuaded by hyper-technical statutory considerations. So the court was doing what this court said in the McPherson versus Blocker case that it cannot do, is allow itself to insert itself or the Florida Constitution above what is required by Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution. It also seems to me quite evident, in response to what Justice Kennedy was asking earlier, that there was concern about the federal statutory provision. The language to which I think Justice Kennedy was referring is on page 32A of the appendix to the petition from the court's decision, and there's a footnote there that does refer to reference to 3 U.S.C. 1 through 10, which of course includes Section 5, and it says so in conjunction with the statement that the exercise of the discretion by the Secretary of State could not be done in such a way that would preclude Florida voters from participating fully in the federal electoral process. The court was assuming, it seems to me, that it the decision it was rendering was not going to cause a conflict with the federal statutory scheme, and it was, we submit, in error in that regard. So the to sum up with respect to this, the Florida Supreme Court radically changed the legislative scheme because it thought it could do so under the Florida Constitution. By doing so, it acted inconsistently with Article 2 of the Constitution and inconsistently with Section 5 of Title 3, and it has brought about precisely the circumstances that Section 5 of Article of Section 3, Title 3, was designed to avoid.
In the conclusion, the paragraph on page 37A, where they summarize what they said, there's nothing there about the Florida Constitution. Is only about the Florida Election Code. They say they must construe the Florida Election Code as a whole, and they point out the provisions in conflict. There's not one word in that paragraph that says anything about the Florida Constitution.
The very second paragraph refers to the Florida Constitution and the rights to vote. Page 36A of the appendix to the petition.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. The case is submitted.